हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32 describes this impure state of consciousness as follows. Someone may say that aside from devotees who always seek shelter at the Lord's lotus feet, there are those who are not devotees but who have accepted different processes for attaining salvation. What happens to them? In answer to this question, Lord Brahma and the other demigods said, O lotus-eyed Lord, although non-devotees who accept severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated, their intelligence is impure. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your lotus feet. So, because we're dealing with this Ishvashya principle is that everything is connected to Krishna. So then... You know, we'll be thinking in the way of, okay, if I have stuff, then I have to connect that to Krishna, right? I have my house, I have my family, I have whatever I may have. That's connected to Krishna. That's the quota given to me. Now, but when it comes to knowledge, then we may just think, well, this is just something that, you know, we can do. This is just natural, unalienable right, you know, that we have. But unfortunately... This element also comes into the context of the, this Ishvashya principle, is that if that knowledge is not connected to Krishna, then it also is basically useless, right? As has been pointed out. So those people who, without going to Krishna, think they're liberated, they never are. They're not liberated. Right? Does that make sense? So their point being is that actually only those who understand the Lord are liberated, right? One may ask about, well, what about those who are the Brahmavadis who are absorbed in Brahman? But Krishna is Brahman. So they're accepting Brahman. And so they may be on that platform, but unfortunately from that platform they'll still come down, right? But the Mayavadis, they don't see anything in connection with the Lord, or transcendence, so they're not even actually understanding Brahman, because Brahman is an aspect of the Lord. So they, in their pride, they never get this imagined superiority, right? Because someone on the actual Brahman platform doesn't feel himself superior. Right? So basically speaking, the main point is that only those who have regard for the Lord and for his worship, then they will get any benefit. Because whether one's in the material world or not in the material world, it still is not up to us. Right? It's up to the Lord. It's his control. So we can't think that we will control and give up the material world, and that's within our right. Okay, we can't enjoy the material world. That then we have to go through someone else. But to give it up, that we can do on our own. No. To enjoy it, to give it up, whatever is the position, it must be done with the Lord's grace. Does that make sense? Yeah. Mantra 10. Mantra 9 describes the results of indulging in ignorance and developing false knowledge. Mantra 10 declares that real knowledge is different than either of these. Okay. So in other words, you have ignorance and then you have this false knowledge or knowledge not connected to the Lord. Right? we always have to remember is that when they'll target, it's like this. If I want to say, okay, let us say I say, okay, you know, leaders like, let's say, you know, dictators and those kind of things. You know, let's say take Stalin or take, I mean, don't want to disturb anybody's mind. I heard Stalin was number 3 on the list of, you know, preferred persons in Russia, whatever. So, you know, Stalin or you know, I say Hitler, you know, some other these personalities. So now if you are saying they're bad, then that already includes, you know, Idi Amin and, you know, the local guy down at the Banana Republic. Does that make sense? Right? So when we go after the impersonalists or the gyanis, that means we've gone after everybody else who fancies themselves smart because they've stuck their nose in a book. Does that make sense? So it's not that, oh, this is all those dirty, stinky, you know, how you say, Mayavadis and Varanasi and Hrishikesh. It's directed at them, but what they know is way beyond what anybody else knows. And still they've missed the point because they haven't connected to Krishna. So that means anybody else who is some kind of scholar or academic or religious, anybody like that who's basing their life on the superiority based on knowledge, if it's not connected to Krishna, they're in the same boat. We always have to remember this. You know, that's the part of the discussion that nobody likes. It's not politically correct. It's not nice. Everyone likes it to stick to niceties, stick to the third person as far away as possible. But that's okay as long as we take that and apply it in our life. Right? So that's what is the position of the Upanishads, is that they give you knowledge by which you apply it. Right? They give you the knowledge of this, then you're supposed to apply it. Now, to make it easier, therefore, this knowledge has come to us in the form of Purana, because then you can see people in these various categories not doing things in connection to Krishna and having trouble, and those who are doing in connection with Krishna, then it works very nicely for them. Right? So already one step of the application has been taken care of by the Shastra itself. Right? Now it's just a matter of you can relate to that. You know, rather than, okay, Yudhishthira, everything went nice for him, and Duryodhana didn't go so good for him. But, you know, I don't wear a crown and walk around with a sword, even though I'm an administrator and do all that. So whatever was, you know, happened to them doesn't apply to me. That would be a mistake. Right? Yes.
Some of the Mayavadis are quite learned, so they're quite intelligent.
Yes.
Then when they get confronted with Krishna conscious Siddhanta, what's the element which keeps them from accepting it? Is it that they're just following the party line, so it's pride, or it's their so-called faithfulness to their party flag, or what's the thing which...
If it was faithfulness, they would accept if there's good argument. So it'll have to be based on pride, because the bottom line, at least in the Mayavadis in that, is they want to be God. A Brahmavadi is not actually going to have any problem, because they accept that there is transcendence. They means, in other words, a Mayavadi says everything you see is illusion. Then there's transcendence. A Brahmavadi says everything you see is transcendence. There is nothing else other than transcendence. So they say the illusion is that you don't understand its transcendence. So actually they're closer to the truth, but they only know the first level of truth. They don't know Paramatma and Bhagavan. So you could discuss. Someone who is actually sincerely thinking this path is actually going to get me benefit, then there's some possibility of discussion. But those who out of pride, they want to be God, they're very proud of the scholarship and all that, then their intelligence will be blocked. That's why it's called the Mayaya Pratigyana. It's Maya just steals their intelligence, so they can't see.
So the Yatamatatapat would be a Mayavadi, not a Brahmavadi.
No, that would be a Mayavadi. Brahmavadis is Sukadev, 4 Kumaras, few people like that. Brahmavad is everything's Brahman, therefore that's why I don't need to preach.
Well, we find sometimes people who are like Brahmavadis were kind of established in the mode of goodness, very few. But even then, when faced with Krishna consciousness, they're like, okay, that's fine for you, and this is fine for me.
Then that's at least nice. At least they acknowledge and accept that it's valid. But a proper Mayavadi wouldn't. That's just basically, they don't want to be think about it. They don't want to be bothered, so they just don't want you to. You don't bring it up, they won't discuss it. You know, sit down, have some lunch. Something more easy to deal with, like that. So that'll be typical, the more common. They don't want any confrontation. But basically, it's their pride, lack of understanding. You know, especially if they're very mature in their field. You know, someone, that's what's so special. Prakashananda Saraswati, he has 10,000 sannyas disciples, not other disciples. And he, when he was convinced by Lord Chaitanya, the philosopher, he was able to surrender along with his disciples. So that's very rare. You know, or what's his name? The Bhattacharya, Sarvabhauma. So he was considered the top scholar in India, in the impersonal. And he surrendered. So that kind of thing is more rare, that they can actually just understand that. So that means they're actually on that position because they're true seekers. But otherwise, most people aren't like that because of pride. Just like when Prabhupada was giving a recommendation, when you go into a new town or city, you don't know anybody there or anything. He says, then you start going to people and find out who is the richest person, you know, the most famous for, you know, their religious acts and stuff like that. And so you get the first three people, the names, who are the top three. He says the first two you leave, you visit the third one. He says the first two will be too proud. You know, the first one's in the first position, the second one's thinking, I'll get into the first position. But the third one is just, you know, he knows he's not in, up for that, and so he's just, you know, pious. So he says, you go to him, he stay at his house. Like that. You don't bother with the other people. Is that okay? Okay. Okay. The Vedic knowledge is two types. Paravidya, transcendental knowledge, and aparavidya, material knowledge, connected with the Lord and thus spiritualized, right? Very important. Material knowledge that is connected with the Lord, that is aparavidya. If it's not connected, it's avidya, the same knowledge, right? Just like the potato. It's cooked for Krishna, then it becomes transcendental. It's not cooked for Krishna, it's cooked for yourself, it's material. Right? It's the same thing. It's not that it's a different branch of knowledge. Does that make sense? You know. So it's not that, it means if you take the astrology book, and you use it for Krishna, it becomes aparavidya. You don't use it for Krishna, it's avidya. Right? Like that. You know, it's not that, you know, car and driver, you know, that's avidya. Does that make sense? So, in other words, the point is that it all depends upon if it's connected to Krishna or not. That's all. Like that. Vedanta Sutra, Bhagavatam, you accept it, don't accept it, it's still transcendental. Right, but these other books, it depends upon you and you're dealing with it, whether it's transcendental or not. Disconnected from its spiritual dimension, material knowledge becomes useless and even dangerous. Quote, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a great acharya, maintained that all forms of material knowledge are merely external features of the material energy. And by culturing them, one becomes no better than an ass. Right. It's even notice the spelling of ass. It's got three letters. The same principle is found here in Sri Ishopanishad. By advancement of material knowledge, modern man is simply being converted into an ass. Sri Ishopanishad Mantra 10 purport. Okay. Right. So, in other words, if it's not connected to Krishna by cultivating it, then one becomes an ass. Why do they use the example of an ass? Because a donkey is someone who carries around a burden that it itself can't take advantage of. Right? It carries stuff all day for someone else. But it itself never gets the advantage of what it carries. Like that. So these scholars that cultivate material knowledge, they're carrying around this load or weight of material knowledge, but they, as the soul, cannot use it because it's not connected to Krishna. So therefore, they're compared to donkeys, like that. Continuing, the modern education has no value because it does not give actual knowledge. As a result, in the contemporary society, there are anomalies such as nationalism, religious fanaticism, and lack of culture. Genuine knowledge is acquired from a dhira, one who is not disturbed by material illusion. Excuse me. Quote, so people are searching, asking, what is God? Searching, 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 but they fail. They say, oh, there is no God. I am God. Finished, you see? This is not possible. Here it is said, iti shushuma. This is Vedic knowledge, heard, shushuma. From where does shushuma come? From the storekeeper? No. Dhiranam shushuma. Iti shushuma dhiranam. What is dhiranam? It comes from the sober sect. Not this fanatic sect, but the sober sect. Dhira. Dhira means those whose senses are not agitated by material influence, or swami, or goswami. Srila Prabhupada lecture on Shri Upanishad Mantra 10, LA, 1970. Okay. So here, it's not actual knowledge because of the element of this not being connected to Krishna. Right? The one may say, okay, well, it gets you a job, this, that. So that's all the knowledge is useful for. It gets you a job. But it won't further your spiritual life, so it'll get you some money. Right? Or it may get you in a door somewhere. Right? Like some people have a key. Right? So you have letters after your name, so they let you in the door. Does that make sense? Or they're willing to pay attention to you because you have those letters after your name. But that's where it ends. One should always remember. So one says, even if it's for preaching, great. That aspect is for preaching. Everything else about it is not. One has to be very, very careful about this. Otherwise, there'll be that Veda Garva, or pride of one's knowledge. So that's the problem that comes up here, is that because of this pride, then they never actually attain the lotus feet of the Lord. Does this make sense? One has to be able to distinguish these points very carefully. In other words, one may have studied, one may have spent so many years getting one's degree. That's nice, that's good. And now if he can use it, very good. He can take care of himself, his family, or even being able to use it as an element in Krishna consciousness for his preaching. But the knowledge once gained, that you will have to be very careful about to understand it is not transcendental. Right? And so one has to be very, very careful in the application of that into one's own personal life and into, how do you say? Into others' lives. But if we notice, Varna, right, occupation, is separate than ashram. They go together, they work together. But Varna is considered social, right, because you have your economics and everything else there. The ashram, that's considered spiritual. Does that make sense? So because you have a degree, and from that you're able to maintain your family, but the knowledge of that degree is not what makes ashram work. Does that make sense? A kshatriya knows his duties, but when it comes to ashram, it's brahminical culture and knowledge that makes it work. The vaishya, he makes his money and all that, he has the knowledge of economics, but that's not what makes ashram work. Ashram works on brahminical standards and qualities. Does this make sense? So one has to be very, very careful. If one can't distinguish this, then one will have a problem. Because then we'll bring that into one's life and try to control others' lives with that knowledge. You try to make your standing based on that. Social standing, maybe, but spiritual standing, it has nothing to do with it. Right? Does that make sense? It's very, very important. Because you see, you have this story of Bharadwaj's son. Bharadwaj and himself, they just would perform austerity. They weren't studying the Vedas. But Rabbi Muni, he was. He and his sons, they were great scholars of the Vedas. So somehow or another, then, it was perceived by Bharadwaja's son that Rabbi's son was the sons were thinking less of him and his father because they didn't know anything really. So then he decided, okay, I'll do austerity and get knowledge. So he's doing severe austerity. Indra comes to him and says, this is not the method. You want knowledge, you go to a teacher. You serve a teacher. Otherwise, you get knowledge by austerity, then you'll be destroyed because you'll be proud. And if you're proud, you never use it properly. He gave an example of someone else who had learned the Vedas, and he was so proud that he would disregard the other, you know, munis and rishis. So his father got the benediction that his son would, you know, be immortal. But then the demigod says, we can't make him immortal because, you know, he's a human being. Says, but you can base his immortality on some other object. So he says, okay, just like this mountain here. It was a big, big mountain. Just like this is, you know, immortal, my son will live. So they agreed to that. As long as that mountain's there, then he'll be alive. Mountain's not there, he'll die. So then he insulted some sages, and then these sages, they became annoyed. And because he would act with such impunity, because he would live forever, and if they could curse him, the curses wouldn't work. Because, you know, he was given this benediction. So then they understood is he will live as long as this mountain lives. So then the sage, by his potency, created these huge buffaloes who then went and, you know, started breaking the mountain down until it was just dust. And as soon as it was dust, then he died. Like that. So that was given as example to Bharadwaja's son. But he still continued. And then finally, you know, they could see he's not going to give up. They gave him this knowledge. But then from this, he got himself killed, because then he was like that other, Brahmin. He became very proud and would go harass the other Brahmins, and his father says, don't go near Rabia Muni's ashram. But he did anyway and started to, you know, talk to, Rabia Muni's son's wife. And so then Rabia Muni, you know, made an arrangement that there was, you know, a lady demon, nice-looking lady demon, and a rakshasa. And so the lady demon went up and talked to him, and while she's talking, she stole his water pot. And then the rakshasa comes to kill him, but he has no water to, you know, chant his mantras. So then, in this way, he gets killed. So then, So then, point is that this pride of it, where you bring in your academic knowledge into the ashram, that doesn't work, because the ashram is made of good qualities: respect for authority, studying the scriptures, performing these activities as brata, your spiritual duties, your sadhana. Does that make sense? So it's two different things. They're basically connected, but we understand that Brahma's knowledge is connected because it is Vedic. So therefore, the Vedic knowledge coming into the ashram works very nice, but still you have to apply the qualities of the ashram on it. Otherwise, it's not going to work in your personal life. It may work as a varna, as a method of making money, but it won't act, it won't work in such a way for your own personal benefit. Does that make sense? Very, very important to be able to make this distinction. Because otherwise, then you'll become proud and you think, because I have this knowledge, I'm special, I'm advanced. But no, you're not. You just have a good position for, you know, getting some facility in the material world. But as far as personal advancement goes, it has nothing to do with it. Well, why does it have something to do with it? I have a car, so that makes me a great cook. It's like, well, what has it got to do with each other? You know? Oh, the car has wheels and the karai is round, so hey, that's the connection, you know. You know, but it doesn't work like that. So just because, oh, that's knowledge and we study scriptures in here, so therefore, you know, they both came out of a book, so therefore it's the same, you know. I've gotten letters after my name because I'm good at sticking my nose in a book. No. The other thing is you're good at personal development, the service attitude, submission, respect, cleanliness. That's what it's all about. Right? Then it happens to be, okay, you either for some reason or another need to do these other things, get these degrees. Great, do it, but know it that that's varna. It's not ashram. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise then we make the mistake. Someone, let's say, is an art teacher. So he's saying he's a teacher, so therefore a Brahmin. No. Artists teach art. Sometimes you get Brahmins who teach art, but generally artists teach art. Right? You have a musician. You want to learn music, you go to a musician. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
You're saying with a Brahmana, he's his ashram.
Yes.
How much time and energy do the other ashrams have to put into their varna?
How much of the others do they put into their varna, the other ashram? Basically, Prabhupada mentions 8 hours a day is a proper amount of time for occupation. You know, and the rest of the time should be spent for, you know, your sadhana and other things like that. Because otherwise, more than 8 hours, then you're working beyond what you should in the way of making money. In other words, for economics, you won't work more than 8 hours. Like, you know, that's the general rule. You know, like you take sannyasa, 50, it may be a few years this way or that way. You know what I'm saying? So 8 hours is the standard. So it might be a little less, it might be a little more. You know, I saw one guy in Jamshedpur. He's one, you know, all these trucks, buses and that. The bodies on those buses, his company makes all those. He would do all his work basically in about 40, 45 minutes in a day. Like that. That means how? I don't know. Literally we would talk about, you know, we joke about people talking on two phones at once. He would actually do it. Like that. And then after that, he had the rest of the day free. So he'd work 45, an hour a day on his business. He has one of the biggest biz companies in East India. Like that. So that's another, you know, extreme. So, but the point is that the ideal is that you don't spend any more than that. Otherwise, there's no time for sadhana and that. So whatever you can get in 8 hours, you should be satisfied with. You make your endeavor, and whatever you get. So what I'm saying, this guy in 40 minutes, you know, makes crores of rupees. Someone else in, you know, 8 hours, you know, only gets, you know, 80 rupees. So like that, then depending on how it is, then you adjust your life. But you shouldn't work more than that. Otherwise, you're taking time out of your sadhana, time with the family. You know, other things like that that are important. Is that okay?
Maharaj?
Yes.
Does this apply the same way to community service?
Community service. It depends on what do you mean by community service?
Voluntary service, not money making, but of the 8 hours for a devotee in the temple.
No, because that's their lifestyle. If they're living in the temple, it depends. If they're brahmacharis or that, it's just part of their sadhana, because all they're doing is basically sadhana. They don't have an occupation like that.
Yeah, but we differentiate between active service and the, you know, class rounds.
But it's all part of the same process. Is that in worship of the deity, there has to be something that you're doing specifically for that. Means everybody is going to, you know, get up, take their bath, chant Gayatris, do their japa, attend Mangalarti, worship Tulsi, hear Bhagavatam class, associate with devotees, take darshan, take charanamrita, you know, take prasad. These are all standard that everybody does. Then there'll be the specific, what is your specific service for the deity, like that. But generally that you'd have to just see. That would depend also on the occasion. Like if it's festivals, there'll be more. Anyway, it's more. So at that point in the Pancharatra, there's not so much of a distinction, because the Pancharatra doesn't work really on varna and ashram. Varna and ashram can connect to it very nicely, but like that. But the point is it should be balanced so that service, and it means, so it's only a consideration really for a family person. So a family person then has to just see that balance in the temple service and their sadhana and the home is, you know, it works nicely like that. So the idea is that one is fully absorbed. That's the main thing. But someone in the community who is living outside taking care of themselves, then ideally they don't spend any more than 8 hours on economics, because then they still have their sadhana and, you know, temple kind of programs, their family, all these different kinds of things, their own study, you know, like that. Okay. Okay, so in other words, someone who is not fanatic. In other words, one who is able to see the balance in the whole thing, right? Then you can understand what is there. Because otherwise, then, if you're not dealing with the principles that are there, one will get caught up in the detail. Because you get fanatic about details. You don't get fanatic about principles. Right? It means you can be very strong on principles, because that's the way it works. But the point is the principle always does work. So it's not a matter of it's a problem of application. The problem of application is the detail. So if one is attached to certain detail, then one will have difficulty in application. So if one can work with the principle and from there apply it to all different varieties of detail, that's then the best. So here then the dhira, they're able to give that kind of understanding, like the Goswamis, dhira, dhira, janapiyo, that they are, actually no, that means that they were dear to the dhiras and the non-dhiras. But the point is someone like Sanatan Goswami, whether you were discussing with him some fine point of the Gaudiya philosophy, or you were just asking him, what should I do about getting my daughter married, then he could give nice advice on both. To the point where when Sanatana Goswami left his body, that so many people in Braj, they shaved their head because it was like their father had died. Okay. So that's the meaning then of dhira. Okay? Mantra 11. Yes.
Now in the devotional community and devotional education, people are using those modern techniques of education, and they are saying that we're using the same Vedic principles, but the methods may be, maybe more sophisticated and more adjusted to the.
Better use the word adjusted. Don't use sophisticated. They can say complicated, but they shouldn't use the word sophisticated. You can't get more sophisticated than the Vedas. That would be pure arrogance to say that. You can say it's more complex. It fits. The point is the VTE courses were designed for those who had spent basically their life. It's designed for first generation. That they've spent their life going to the modern educational systems. And so, they're working on the principles that, okay, as adults, you'd be going to a college or a university. And in the university, then, they have a few classes, they have some lectures, you do a lot of homework. And they take zero responsibility, basically, for your personal development. So based on that, that's what people are used to. And so they wanted to make an educational system that those devotees who wanted to study, especially since most of them only have a very short time, in between their services or their family life or other things, that they can get away. So they wanted to make a system that was very short and at the same time very familiar. So that's why they developed that system. But to call it more sophisticated than the Vedic, that you'd have to be an idiot to say that. You know what I'm saying? Because there's nothing more sophisticated than the Vedic. Because you're dealing with subtleties of understanding how two contradictory things work very nicely together, which they don't bother with. So therefore, they can say complicated, to match the modern person's complicated lifestyle. But they shouldn't say more sophisticated. They can say it is a sophisticated system. That's fine. But they should never say it's more sophisticated than the Vedas. Otherwise, then, they've completely missed the point. Like that. So, it's means, in other words, the purpose for which it's conceived is valid. Because for others to get used to the language and the methods that are used and all that, it may take longer than 3 months that your Bhakti Shastri course is lasting. We've had people come and sit for, some time at the classes and can't understand what we're saying. Right? And then they go away. And then next year they come, either it's soaked in a bit or something like that, then they can understand. because the approach is so different. Therefore, it's longer term. That's why you see the courses like the Bhakti Shastri. Our Bhakti Shastri is 3 years, right? But then it's 3 years also for Bhakti Vaibhav, Bhakti Vedanta, Bhakti Sarangpa. So even though you're dealing with more deep and more volume of material, because you're more adjusted with these traditional methods and vocabularies, that you can do more in less time. So it's understood it'll take about 3 years to actually really be able to see everything through this kind of knowledge, right? So that's why the course is called Shastra Chakshus, right? It's that, so that you see whatever you look at, you can see it with according to what's being said here. You know, in other words, oh, he has this, so is it connected to Krishna, right? How is it connected to Krishna? Technically, how does it work? Because what they'll be dealing with is basically the transcendental through generally physical methods and examples. You know what I'm saying? Well, in this system, you use the physical, but you put a lot more emphasis on the metaphysical, because that's where the confusion comes up. How to tell if something is a principle or a detail? How to tell if the detail you're applying, if you've understood the principle, if you've understood how to apply the detail in your situation. Basically, there you're dealing with a lot of the metaphysics. You know, the mind, the intelligence, the workings of the senses, rasa. Excuse me. How relationships function. You know what I'm saying? So that kind of a thing, that then takes... That's what's the hard part. The philosophy is very straightforward, you know, using these other kind of tricks that, you know, they catch your attention quickly. You know, you stand there, and without looking, you have to fall over backwards, and someone else catches you, or, you know, things like that. It immediately catches your attention and brings you to that physical platform and the trust on that physical. So it does that very quickly. But as far as understanding metaphysics, it doesn't do anything for you. You understand? You understand metaphysics by discussing it. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you understand philosophy by discussing philosophy. You understand the physical nature by discussing physical nature. You understand metaphysics by discussing it. Does that make sense? So because it's subtle, and therefore, for many, they consider it not even practical. Right? But what they don't understand is the practical person is understanding some of the metaphysical aspect. Right? The person expert in economics actually understands the nature of economics and can apply it most successfully in the broadest range of situations. Therefore, they're very successful economically. But they don't understand that that's actually the cause of their success. They think it's because I did this and I did that. No. The reason that you doing this or that worked is because you actually understood the principles that were there. But it's not necessarily enunciated in your mind. You know, it just happens, just like you breathe. The reason you're alive is because you breathe. You'll say, the reason I'm alive because, you know, I climb mountains and do something exciting. No, you're alive because you breathe. You stop breathing, you're not climbing mountains. That's a detail. So it's because of these things, then they don't actually understand that's actually how it works. Someone who's good at management, who's good in anything, is because actually they're starting to understand the science behind it, though it's unspoken. Those who can speak it, they write books and make millions of dollars. Right? And still no one understands it. Right? Because they really don't understand it. Because unless you understand God, you can't really understand it. Unless you understand the Vedic literatures, you can't really understand it. You can get a good glimpse, but that's where it ends. Does that make sense? So, in other words, all these different methods that are there are focuses. These are all bona fide. It's just a matter of making it clear that this is what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? We're saying here that using this systems of material knowledge not connected with Krishna, that's what's useless. If it works for some people to use those material methods of knowledge in connection with Krishna, that's fine. If you like that taste. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that it's a matter of taste. Someone puts more salt on something, someone less, someone puts pepper, someone not, someone likes chili, not. That's taste. Right? Does that make sense? But the point is that the Vedic knowledge must be given in such a way that you can practically apply it in your life. That's education. Otherwise, if you can't apply it in your life, then that's called shravana, or hearing. It's the first stage of learning. But it should come to the point where there's hearing, then there is practice. So if you can practice in your life, it comes to the second stage, manana. So the modern context doesn't deal with that at all, zero, unless you're going to, you know, medical school, music school, or law school. Then you have to do practical, right? But it's still, it's up to the individual whether you'll come to a nididhyasana, realize it and take it up, you know, value it. Does that make sense? So basically, your general modern academic is only dealing with shravana. Like that. That's as far as it goes. That's as far as they want to go. Because to take it to the other levels means more commitment on the part of the teacher also. Right? Because otherwise, why is it here? Means Ishopanishad. Here we had, you know, half a page on Mantra 10 here. How many pages do you get, have to read normally to do an essay in these modern educational things? Right? Sometimes books. You know what I'm saying? But why can you go through it? So today we're going to do, you know, Mantra 10. You know, tomorrow we're going to do Mantra 11. That's very nice if everybody understands the knowledge. If you understand it where you don't have any doubts on it, then that's nice. We can go through it that quick. But we're expecting that will happen when we get to the Bhakti Vaibhav level. What we spend here days to discuss should be 5 minutes of just reference in the Bhakti Vaibhav. You know, we should be able to just say, you know, the mistake here is because the emphasis is on the Sankarsha instead of the Prajumna aspect in the Sambandha. That's why the rasa is not working. That's all we have to say. And then they understand it. And they saw, okay, that's what happened here in the application. Right? But if you don't understand those terms, all that, the concept of Sambandha Abhideya Prayojan, all that, then you're going to spend days discussing it. So that's why this class moves very slow. The idea is that everybody should understand it so they can apply it. You know? And that's why when we finish something, means if we haven't finished something, we start again back at a point and then go again. So sometimes 2 or 3 days we do the same point, or we never get out of the same paragraph. Because there's something more to bring out. And you see some days there's so many questions and discussion, and then other days, you know, everybody understands. Does that make sense? So, in other words, we have no problem with any variety of educational system. We find it very absurd that they will say theirs is the only system, the Vedic system doesn't work. That's the time then we get a little nasty and say, well, that's because they don't know what the Vedic system is or never even used it. They thought they were using it. You know, it's like Dronacharya's son, you know, drinking chalk in water and saying, oh, I drank milk. You know what I'm saying? So we try to avoid that kind of situation. Does that make sense? So someone wants to... So the point of that education is in as user-friendly way as possible, in the shortest amount of time, the most efficient way, you get them through these courses that Prabhupada wanted them to study. Right? Then you have other schools that then deal specifically in some other method. So if it's clear, it's there. You have the Sanskrit school. They're just trying to teach you Sanskrit and the basic philosophy, or, you know, good philosophy, so that you can translate. That's the whole purpose of the school. It's not something else. So when they teach the philosophy and that, it's in relationship to, if you don't know the philosophy, how are you going to translate? And you need to know the grammar because you translate from Sanskrit. So they put together their courses. So they may have the same courses that everybody else has. But their thrust is to translate. Right? Another school, basically previously, their only purpose was to get you a karmi degree so you can get a job. That was all they were trying to do. Nothing else. Right? And then they do, you know, well at that. Does that make sense? So if that's what somebody wants, that's the school you go to. Is that okay? So we don't have a problem with the other schools, right? But the difficulty is many have problems with us, because the idea is that if you can't do Vedic, then all these other things are fine. But they should be able to stand on their own good qualities, right? It's not that we have to use modern education because the Vedic doesn't work. That's stupid. No, we're using modern education because we feel it works better for the situation we're trying to generate. Does that make sense? Yes. Does that make sense? So.
Yeah, but is there any solution for those who have no time? You know, many people have no time to come here.
They have no time to come here, then they can do by correspondence. You know, they fit it in when they can, how they can. Basically, they just have to read the material like that, study the books, and listen to the lectures, write their essays. So when they do it, how they do it, that's not our problem. That's, you know, up to them. You know what I'm saying? They'll work it in. Somebody does it at night, somebody in the morning, someone in the day, someone on the weekend. So it doesn't matter. Somebody reads the material in 2 days, writes 3 essays. That's fine. You know, and then for the rest of the week, they have to work. It's okay. So that's what it's there for. That's why the system's like that. It's very loosely woven, so it can be applied in all these ways.
How can you motivate them to go deeper into metaphysics? I mean, to be.
I mean, it's the material itself. Either they'll figure it out, or they'll get really bored. You know what I'm saying? I mean, someone's only going to continue with this kind of study if it means something to them. You know what I'm saying? Because there has to be a motive. Right, you want to get the degree. That's why you do something or this or that. But this one is too lengthy and too technical that they're not going to do that if it doesn't make sense to them. If it makes sense to them, the knowledge itself will be inspiring, so they'll move forward. But otherwise, it's not. Like our previous Bhakti Shastri course was written by the person writing it would read Prabhupada's purport, each purport 6 times. And it's actually an interesting thing if you've ever done it. You read the first time, you catch kind of a few points. You read it the second time, you know, right after that. Then you start to see very clearly points. You read the third time, you start to see each sentence has something going on. You read the fourth time, then it's like words start popping out. You know, just this one and this. Even you keep going until it's like almost down to like syllables. So then the person wrote the course based on that understanding. Then the problem was is that in the beginning, everyone took it up enthusiastically because it was dealing with such amazing stuff, but no one made it more than halfway through because after a point, they couldn't figure it out because they weren't reading the purport 6 times. Right? So the thing has to be readjusted that it's more obvious the points being made so that people can make the connection. Does that make sense? Is that okay? You had something?
Yeah, you mentioned that the student practicing the knowledge takes more commitment from the teacher. Why is that?
Why does it take more commitment? Because the when someone goes to apply it, that's when the most questions come up. Like if I just tell you, okay, you take a pot, you put some ghee in it, you put in the spices, you just cook them till the, you know, they're this color. Then you put in these other spices, and, you know, and cook them until the ghee separates from the stuff. Then you put in, you know, the vegetables that have already been pre-cooked, and you know, mix them around, put some water, bring it to a boil when it's kind of a nice sauce and that. Then you add these other few spices and take it off. Straightforward, right? And so you think I can cook it. But when you go there, then you go, how hot is that ghee? How much exactly is the ghee? What does brown mean? Brown's a pretty broad range of color, you know, like that. You know, if it's not jet black, some will consider it brown, you know, like that, you know. I mean, the cumin seed is already, you could say, it's kind of brownish to begin with. So does it get cooked at all? You know, so these kind of questions come up. What does it mean it separates from the ghee? Does it go, you know, they go into like little crunchy, you know, like, how you say, crystals, you know, and that's separated? Or, you know, so that's what it means. What does that mean? It's, a, you know, a nice sauce, you know, like, you know, it's like, you know, ketchup or, you know, so, you know, what does it mean? What does that mean, sauce? Does that make sense? So that's what happens is that to say it is easy, you know, and to say it very clearly, then that's more difficult. And to say that's very clever, that you can give people things to grasp onto, is even more clever. You know, you have your four quadrants and quadrant. That's even more clever. But to actually deal with them as they apply it, that takes more. Because then they go to apply it, questions come up. Because they don't see in the application. And then it's easy as long as you're not dealing with ego. If you're dealing with ego, then that's a problem. So if there's a reason that you need to deal with the ego, then it'll you know, you have the position. If you're not in a position to deal with the ego, then you just kind of have to, you know, smile and, you know, say you're doing a great job. You know, that kind of a thing. Does that make sense? Is that? So that's the... Okay. Time's up. Okay. So then tomorrow we'll continue with mantra 11. Okay?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi. Thank you.